Swell Maps, taking us home on tonight's Experiment with Time. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. If you've been digging the music you've heard here in the past hour, check out the full playlist up on WRCT.org. Have a great night, folks. Take care of yourselves.
Listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, and this is the stormy weather.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Today we published our report analyzing Israel's conduct in the Gaza Strip pursuant to the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. The Commission concluded that Israel has committed genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza and that it is continuing with that genocide. Every day that passes, the killings and the starvation of the Palestinians continue. The goal of the Israeli government is abundantly clear as we continue to witness the destruction of Palestinians in Gaza. The Commission finds it is genocide. The Commission concludes that statements made by Israeli authorities are direct evidence of genocidal intent.
That's Navi Pillay, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Navi Pillay, Chris Sidoti, and Irene Khan on Israel's genocide in Gaza, the UN report. In mid-September, the UN issued a report stating that Israel is committing genocide in Gaza. Israel vehemently denies the charge. Genocide is the crime of crimes. It's a highly charged and loaded word. To verify it requires clear and unambiguous evidence. The term was coined by the Polish-Jewish lawyer Raphael Lemkin. The term genocide combines the Greek prefix genos, which means race or tribe, with the Latin suffix side, killing. Lemkin was aware of the Armenian genocide carried out by the Turks earlier in the 20th century. During the Holocaust, he lost many family members. Lemkin and others were responsible for the Genocide Convention, which was passed unanimously by the UN in 1948. In addition to the recently released UN report, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the International Association of Genocide Scholars, as well as two prominent Israeli rights organizations, B'Tselem and Physicians for Human Rights Israel, and other groups, declared that Israel's military actions in Gaza constitute genocide. We begin this program with Irene Khan. She's followed by Navi Pillay and Chris Sidoti. The moderator is Todd Pittman, Media Advisor, UN Human Rights Office. They spoke at the UN in Geneva in mid-September. Irene Khan is the UN Special Rapporteur on the Promotion and Protection of the Right to Freedom of Opinion and Expression. Navi Pillay is Chair of the UN Independent Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel. Chris Sidoti is a member of the UN Independent Commission. And now, Irene Khan.
Gaza has become the deadliest conflict ever for journalists. More journalists have been killed in Gaza than in both world wars, Vietnam War, wars in Yugoslavia, and the war in Afghanistan combined, according to one research institute. The UN number right now is 252, but that is, of course, likely to go up because every week we hear news of more killings. In August alone, 9 journalists were killed in 3 horrific, bloody incidents, as you may remember. Many of these 252 journalists have been targeted, by which we mean deliberately picked out and killed because of the work that they are doing to expose the atrocities, the crimes, the genocide on the ground. Let me spend 1 minute on the strategy that Israel seems to have developed, where they will first delegitimize and discredit a journalist. Smear campaigns are started, accusing the journalists of being terrorist supporters or terrorists themselves, and then they are killed. So it is not just killing journalists, but killing. The attempt is being very clearly made here to kill the story, because local journalists in Gaza today are carrying the brunt of that killing spree, because they are the ones, only ones who are there. Gaza, what is happening in Gaza is extremely unusual in that I cannot recall another situation where a member state of the United Nations has denied access to independent international media for a conflict, for atrocities, for the unfolding of genocide, and now genocide actually happening. We have not seen in any other country a situation like that happening, where international media are being denied independent access. The burden then falls on the local journalists who are being picked out, as I mentioned, labeled as terrorists and killed. Journalism is not terrorism. Journalism is not a crime. Journalists are civilians under international humanitarian law and therefore protected like other civilians. However, journalists, because of the nature of their war, have to go where the fighting is. They cannot flee away from the fighting, and they are being then deliberately picked out and killed. International media have been denied access. Al Jazeera has been actually banned from even operating in the West Bank or in Israel itself. As Francesca Albanese, as you know, has written about the anatomy of genocide and the economy of genocide, and I would say that the story of the way in which journalists are being killed, silenced, killing journalists, murdered, in fact, is the cover-up of genocide, because these local journalists are the main source for news right now from the ground up. And if they can be stopped, if the information that is leaking out to the world can be stopped somehow, the Israeli Defense Forces believe that they can continue to do what they are doing with impunity. And that actually is the critical word here, impunity. Israel has never been held accountable. Israel has never allowed independent investigation of a single killing of a journalist ever in the Palestinian occupied territories. We have cases going back 20 years that have not ever been investigated internationally. And that, of course, has created this environment of permissibility in which the Israeli Defense Forces can do what they want to destroy those who are daring to expose the truth on the ground. And that, to me, is a big tragedy. certainly for the journalists themselves, certainly for the genocide in Gaza, but I think for media freedom around the world, a terrible precedent here is being made. And those countries that champion media freedom, those who speak about independent media, I hold them responsible at this stage. They must bring pressure to bear on Israel to allow independent investigation of the killings, to allow international access to international independent media. The very presence of international independent media will give some degree of protection to local journalists who are out there working alone, and of course, to stop the killing itself. Without journalists, we know that this story will never be complete. The information will be very difficult to get. Already, local journalists are suffering the same conditions like the rest of the population, looking for food, water, shelter. They've had family members killed, and yet they continue. Many of them continue very bravely to report. But how long can that go on happening? In fact, in my last press release, the title was "States Must Stop Israel Before All Journalists in Gaza Are Silenced." And that is what I fear. I hope very much that you will speak up for those in your own community, journalists in your own professional community, speak up loud and clear that this must come to an end and Israel must be held accountable. Thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us at this press conference here in Geneva with the Independent International Commission of Inquiry on the Occupied Palestinian Territory, including East Jerusalem and Israel. The commission is here to share with you the findings of their latest report to the Human Rights Council and answer any questions you may have about that report on the situation in Gaza. We'll start today with an opening statement by the chair, Ms. Navi Pillay, then we'll open the floor to your questions. Thank you.
Today, we published our report analyzing Israel's conduct in the Gaza Strip pursuant to the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. The Commission concluded that Israel has committed genocide against the Palestinian people in Gaza and that it is continuing with that genocide. It is now almost 2 years since Israel launched its military campaign in the Gaza Strip in October 2023. This has been the most ruthless, prolonged, and widespread attack against the Palestinian people since 1948. Every day that passes, the killings and the starvation of the Palestinians continue. On 22nd August, the Famine Review Committee determined that famine is currently occurring in Gaza Governorate. At the time, the committee had projected famine thresholds to be crossed in Deir al-Balah and Khan Yunis Governorates in the coming weeks. The goal of the Israeli government is abundantly clear as we continue to witness the destruction of Palestinians in Gaza. The Commission finds it is genocide. In our report, the Commission found that the Israeli authorities and Israeli security forces committed and are continuing to commit the following underlying acts of genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. One, killing members of the group. Two, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group. Three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And four, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. On the specific intent of genocide, the Commission concludes that statements made by Israeli authorities are direct evidence of genocidal intent. The Commission also concludes that the pattern of conduct is circumstantial evidence for genocidal intent, and that genocidal intent was the only reasonable inference that could be drawn from a totality of the evidence. Therefore, the Commission concludes that the Israeli authorities and Israeli security forces have the genocidal intent to destroy in whole or in part the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The Commission finds that the Israeli political and military leaders are agents of the State of Israel. Therefore, their acts are attributable to the State of Israel. The Commission therefore concludes that the State of Israel bears responsibility for the failure to prevent genocide, for the commission of genocide, and for the failure to punish genocide against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. On incitement to genocide, the Commission concludes that many Israeli political and military leaders, including President Isaac Herzog, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and then Defense Minister Yoav Gallant, had incited the commission of genocide, and that Israeli authorities have failed to take action against them to punish this incitement. This report is the result of almost 2 years of work. The commission began its investigation immediately on 7th October 2023, and has documented more than 16,000 pieces of evidentiary materials to date. The Commission has published 3 mandated reports and 3 thematic papers since 7th October 2023. And our findings in this report are based on the factual findings contained in all the reports that we had published since 7th October 23, as well as the findings from our upcoming mandated report to the General Assembly in October 2025. The analysis contained in this report relates solely to the determination of genocide in the Gaza Strip between October 2023 and July 2025. The Commission nevertheless raises the serious concern that the specific intent to destroy the Palestinians as a whole is guiding Israel in its operations in the rest of the occupied Palestinian territory, that is, the West Bank, including East Jerusalem. It is also important to note that the events in Gaza since 7th October 2023 have not occurred in isolation. They were preceded by decades of unlawful occupation and repression under an ideology requiring the removal of the Palestinian population from their lands and their replacement. We recommend all member states, especially those with influence over Israel, to effect an immediate halt to the killing and harming of civilians in Gaza, to guarantee humanitarian access to Gaza, and to prevent further destruction of life and suspend arms transfers or financial assistance that could contribute to further genocidal acts. The Genocide Convention was born out of humanity's darkest chapters. Today, we witness in real time how the promise of never again is broken and tested in the eyes of the world. The ongoing genocide in Gaza is a moral outrage and a legal emergency. Member states must act now. There is no need to wait for the International Court of Justice to declare it a genocide. All states are obligated to use whatever means within its power to prevent the commission of genocide. And so we urge member states to ensure accountability for any crimes that have been committed and prevent further crimes from being committed, not just in Gaza, but the entire occupied Palestinian territory. So that's the end of my statement. And my colleague Chris Sidoti and I are here to respond to your questions, if any. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pele. Now we'll open the floor to questions for the chair and the fellow commissioner, Chris Sidoti. We'll start on the right side. Please identify yourself and the media outlet that you work for.
Laurent Ciro, Swiss News Agency. Thanks for the press conference. You mentioned 4 out of 5 categories, components of genocide that are whose conditions are fulfilled in that case. Could you say why the fifth one has not been met?
The fifth category of genocidal act is the transfer of children from one group to another group. And the reason why that was not established is because we have no evidence of it. This has been an issue in other situations. It is particularly a much debated issue in relation to the Russia-Ukraine dispute, where Ukrainian children were taken to Russia. But we have no evidence that that category five, has arisen in the case of Gaza or the West Bank.
Thank you. Now we'll go again to the front row. Jamie Keaton from the Associated Press, please go ahead.
Hi, I'm Madame Pillay, and hi, Mr. Sidoti. Thank you for your report. I have two questions. The first is the Israeli Foreign Ministry today decried a distorted and false report and said that three individuals, so referring to the Commission of Inquiry, three individuals serving as Hamas proxies notorious for their openly anti-Semitic positions. Could you please comment on that? Your response. And then my second question is, you talk about countries need to act. There has been a widespread condemnation across the world, not just from advocacy groups, but also governments and others. It seems to me that there's a number of countries that have been, let's say, more reticent to condemn Israel's behavior. I'm thinking particularly the United States and Germany. Could you please give us your appeal directly to those two countries? Because you're saying countries in general, but could you be specific to those two countries, please?
Can I respond? I've got the chair's permission, Jamie, to answer your first question. These reports should be taken seriously, but honestly, the Israeli responses are becoming so boring. You know, they say the same thing every time. They're producing the responses by ChatGPT these days, and they spend so much money in the foreign ministry on propaganda, you'd think that they would actually come up with something original. I would want them to engage with the evidence, but they never engage with the evidence. They put the report into ChatGPT, and then they put out the standard response. So no one takes it seriously, and Jamie, you shouldn't either.
You know, this is 2 years' work on our part, painstakingly gathering the facts. You know, we're very aware that we have a mandate to... You can't hear me? All right. So we have a mandate that requires us to share this information to judicial institutions, and we have not only the ICC, but national judiciaries. There was one request. And so we are very, very careful to ensure that we personally investigate and verify every fact here. We even quote the figures released by Israel. And I was labeled anti-Semitic only when I took over as chair of this commission. I served 6 years as High Commissioner for Human Rights, and Israel invited me, the only High Commissioner, to go on a mission to Israel. And they mentioned the balance with which I come in. So I'm sorry to bring in the personal element, but I, as Chris said, I wish they'll tell us where we went wrong on these facts. Or just cooperate with us if they had done any investigations. That's on the one. Yeah, I take your point about naming states. You know, we had two additional mandates given to us by the Human Rights Council 2 years ago, but we never received resources for them. Our staff, you know, it's a small number of staff overworking. We're concerned about their health, in fact. So we couldn't deliver on those two, one of which was to produce a report on the transfer of military equipment by states. We started working on this. And so that's why we're not ready to name any states just yet. But we will get there once we get our resources. Thank you for that.
Thank you. In the front row, please go ahead.
I'm Mohamed Alfinich from Alga TV. According to your report, so clearly Israel commit genocide. Can you please tell us, like those, like headlines you can mention as Israel commit genocide. Another things, we've been hearing for the last 2 years, some member of state, they said Israel, it might commit genocide. After your report, do you think now the things are clear about genocide in Gaza?
In the beginning, for instance, we were the first to denounce and condemn the Hamas attacks that took place on 7th October, and we named them as crimes against humanity, violations of international humanitarian law. And that's where we're thinking, because this is a Human Rights Council, that's the laws they provide. Until we see the evidence, like everybody else is watching the television and seeing it in real life. So it's the facts that moved us to investigate. We gather all the facts firstly, assess, verify, and then we see where the facts take us. Now, the law on genocide, how we found the specific intent by connecting the pattern of the acts as well as statements by the leaders. We've enumerated the statements. They're very explicit on treating all Palestinians as Hamas operatives. So I'll have, Chris, would you like to do the second half of the question on the law itself?
Yeah. Navi mentioned the four categories of genocidal act that we found, and we indicated in the opening statement what those four categories are. But your question is well placed, because we didn't go into the detail that underlay our findings in those areas. And we didn't in our statement today, because these facts are so well known. We have recited them in great length in our report. Our report, you've seen it, runs out around 80 pages in length. But the facts are 60,000, 65,000 dead, at least, of whom at least 20,000 are children. These deaths are not accidents. They are not collateral damage. They are the direct consequence of a military strategy of saturation bombing and scorched earth when it comes to the infrastructure of Gaza and the people of Gaza. The numbers that are seriously, physically or mentally injured are enormous, and that's the second category. We are told, we haven't done comparisons with other wars, but we are told that the number of children that have had one or both legs and arms amputated is greater than in any other conflict this century. Certainly we know the number of children who have lost one or both parent. The trauma, the psychological trauma for children will last their whole lives. That's mental harm. The physical injury to people, the amputations, the illnesses, the compounding of disease because of a lack of medical treatment, the consequences of starvation. A child who is malnourished is affected for the rest of the child's life. Serious physical and mental harm. The destruction of conditions of life. We didn't examine the destruction of the residential towers last weekend. Of course, our report was finished before that. But that was just the culmination of what we did find, and that is the wholesale destruction of the infrastructure of Gaza. Residences, homes, hospitals, universities, schools, museums, churches, mosques, archaeological sites, roads, agricultural facilities, the fishing industry. Our reports over 2 years have built the full picture of the extent of the destruction. And the destruction is such, added in particular to the starvation policies, that the conditions of life in Gaza are unsupportable. The third category of genocidal act. And we, for the first time in a UN report, also examined the question of reproductive violence. And our report, published in March this year, dealt, amongst other things, with the destruction of fertility clinics and fertility facilities in Gaza, affecting the continuity of the Gaza population, the fourth category of genocidal act. So we have built our report on the basis of our own investigations. But we haven't taken second-hand, third-hand, fourth-hand information. We haven't relied on other people's reports. We've relied on eyewitnesses, on digital evidence, photographic and video, satellite technology. We particularly have been assisted by the evidence of foreign medical workers who spent time in Gaza. They're not secondary evidence or hearsay evidence. They told us what they actually saw. And it's because of our own investigations that we came to the conclusions that we did. And that's the basis of the last part of your question. Why now? Why now? Because now, after painstakingly collected all of this evidence, now we are able to do what lawyers do. Collect evidence, find facts, apply the law. And this report is our conclusions.
Thank you. Now we'll go to the back and then we'll come back up. Thanks.
Thank you. Musa Asi, Al Mayadeen TV. My question concerning the term of genocide, you used this term maybe for the first one. If this term will have an impact of the work of International Court of Justice, because the International Court of Justice has not fully used this term till now, and the High Commissioner of Human Rights in Geneva has not used this term till now, if there is an impact of those entities. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. I've been asked already whether, had I been the High Commissioner still, I would have reacted as High Commissioner Volker has, and I probably would have. I also believed you have to wait for a court to determine whether genocide has occurred. That's what I used to tell. I told the team at the beginning that that's why we don't examine genocide immediately. Because, as you know, I was a judge on the panel on the Rwanda tribunal that delivered the world's first judgment on genocide. I know how carefully you have to look for evidence to support that special intention to destroy a group in whole or in part. However, serving on this commission, as we said, we looked at the facts. And that means a two-year work. And the High Commissioner Volker doesn't have the benefit of this report until today. Now, why did I learn that genocide must be addressed? It's because how the Genocide Convention makes imposes an obligation on states to prevent and punish genocide. Now, how will they do that if we all sit and wait for some court, if ever, to determine genocide has occurred? And therefore, we must look at the facts, look at the policy statements made by political leaders. We apply the two. And the most important statement we have so far is the order of the ICJ that there is plausible reason that there's a risk of genocide being committed. So that's the most authoritative statement to states and to all of us to examine this crime.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to the front row and then we'll move back.
Thank you very much, Abdullah Imasi from Al Arabi TV. Thanks for this insightful report and well-documented report. Even the Israelis are not happy with it. As you always, like moments ago, the Israeli ambassador said that this report is full of lie and allegation against Israel. Talking about Israeli officials, in your report, you named Herzog, Netanyahu, and Gallant for incitement. Now, my question is, what action should state take after this report? And my second question is like as a follow-up of my colleague from the EP, what single binding step must government take within 30 days under the Genocide Convention? Thank you very much.
So far as those named as having been responsible for the incitement of genocide, we have made a recommendation to the International Criminal Court that examine the evidence in relation to their statements and consider whether they should be prosecuted. That is a matter for the court. I should add that we have focused on the three of the top officials responsible for this area. But there are many, many statements by Israeli political and civilian leaders that incite genocide, and also by others, including some media commentators in Israel, that have been inciting genocide. So we just looked at the tip of the iceberg, and that is those at the very top of the command pyramid within Israeli society. The incitement to genocide is a separate standalone crime under the Rome Statute, and that's what we're focused on, that crime of incitement in naming them at the top of the pyramid of command. So it's up to the court, but we have provided the evidence in our report and we've made a recommendation to the court, and we will see what action the court takes.
Okay, thank you. Second row, please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Jeremy Lange for the French Public Radio. Kind of a follow-up question to my colleagues' previous ones. Another way to ask you for that is, are you hoping that from now on the UN, the Secretary General, the High Commissioner will use the word genocide and not acts of genocide? And same thing for the state parties. And also, are you calling, it's a yes or no question, are you calling for Israeli state leaders, Benjamin Netanyahu, Yoav Gallant, and Isaac Herzog to be brought before the ICC?
So yes to that second question. You just wanted no or yes. Yes, it is our hope that this report will be read by the higher-ups, including the Secretary General at the United Nations. Because they too are trained to be guided by the facts. This is the first time that, and we are the only investigating body of the UN that has taken 2 years to verify facts. So most of these facts already appear in our reports, but we investigated 3 or 4 areas of new facts as well. So the facts should influence high-level leaders at the United Nations also to call this what it is, the genocide.
Yeah, look, just a short addition. Others have commented on genocide before in relation to Gaza. I mean, there have been some excellent NGO reports. And particularly, I would single out the report of Francesca Albanese, the Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territory. A strong report, a well-argued report, produced by a different methodology from ours. Our methodology is based, as I said before, on our own investigations and our own conclusions. So I can say that given that this is investigative-based, this is likely to be the most authoritative report on the question of genocide in Gaza until the International Court of Justice delivers its decision in 2 or possibly 3 years' time. So pending the decision of the court, this is it. And it's up to the Secretary General and the High Commissioner to make their own decisions, but I would expect that they would start using the word genocide based upon our report after it's released now.
You're listening to Chris Sidoti on Israel's genocide in Gaza, the UN report. This is Independent Alternative Radio. For copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online, our website, alternativeradio.org.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Agence France-Presse.
Yes, hi, thank you. Agnès Pedro from AFP. I have two small questions, I hope. The U.S. Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, yesterday called, he talked about barbaric animals, talking about Hamas. So I would be interested to know if you think that this could be considered as well as inciting to genocide, as the, I think the word animals is in the report as well. And then after the publication of this report, I would like also I would be interested to know what would you say as well to the Israeli society, given that their leaders are clearly pointed in the report and the conclusions of the report are quite strong. So what do you say to them, what they should do or what they could do as well? Thank you.
Thank you for the question on inside Israel. You know, to our knowledge, clearly the people inside Israel are not exposed to news as we are, and from all of you. I hope that they get access to this report. Much of our information, I should say, comes from cooperation from people inside Israel, victims, experts, who've shared some of the details with us. And it must affect them to have this kind of report and a recording of the implications of these statements made by their leaders. Now, the Rubio question, I'll leave to Chris.
The Rubio question I'll answer very quickly. I haven't read what he said, and I haven't got the faintest idea what its impact may be. But I do want to join Navi on the second question, because to me, this is one of the most significant issues. I hope that our report will reach through to the people of Israel beyond the majority, not all, but the majority of the Israeli media that consistently wipes out critical information that people are entitled to and that people need. The people of Israel have been betrayed by their government from the beginning. Betrayed on the 7th of October when 1,200 Israeli people were killed. Betrayed by the government in the government's abject refusal to take action to rescue hostages. Betrayed by the Israeli government in pursuing for 2 years now this genocidal war that has made the peace and security and the prosperity of the Israeli people almost impossible for the foreseeable future. The people of Israel are victims in this as much, not as much. There's no comparison with the suffering of the Palestinian people in the last 2 years. But the people of Israel are also the victims of this, victims of the betrayal of their own government. And anything that I can do and we can do that will assist the people of Israel to see what is happening, to take responsibility for their government's actions and act to end it, is only a good, is only a positive. We cannot understand how traumatic the 7th of October was for the people of Israel. And the trauma and their suffering has been ruthlessly manipulated by Netanyahu and his cronies for the last 2 years. And it's time that it stopped. And it's time that those who were responsible for this were held accountable.
Let's take a question from the New York Times.
Yeah, thanks for taking the question. There's a significant gap between plausible evidence of genocide referenced by the ICJ in its provisional order and your conclusion intent to commit genocide was the only reasonable inference that could be drawn. I'm just wondering, there are other possible explanations for some of the incidents that you cite in the report, military units acting on their own, getting carried away, the chaos of war, that it wasn't necessarily a specific plan. Were there specific issues or incidents or acts that helped convince you that you were dealing with intent that was the only reasonable inference? Thank you.
The ICJ will not examine whether genocide has occurred, is occurring, until they reach the stage of arguments on the merits, then they hear both sides. So they had to skirt around that and found plausible grounds that it is happening in order to order the provisional measures. It's too bad that these provisional measures ordered by the ICJ have been violated by Israel.
Again, could I just add a little to what Navi has said, Nick? The position of the ICJ is entirely understandable. I mean, they, as Navi said, they hadn't finished the case, but also they were looking at this 2 years ago. And the best indicator of how strong the ICJ was in what it said has been the hysterical action by the State of Israel and the United States to the ICJ's interim provisional measures based upon the evidence available to it. But I think the ICJ went a long way. That was 2 years ago. Of course, our findings now are different because we've had 2 years to investigate. And we conduct the investigations ourselves. The ICJ is dependent upon evidence being put before it. So we have an advantage in that sense. I'm sorry, the second question again, I got focused on the first.
It was really what allowed you to bridge the gap between plausible evidence and this being the only reasonable inference, intent.
Investigation and reporting. We've been criticised for being slow, and I accept that it's taken a long time, but that's a direct product of our methodology. We've produced reports in the last 2 years on what happened in the first 3 months. The saturation bombing campaign, the continuing slaughter, the destruction of the healthcare facilities, the destruction of educational facilities, sex and gender-based violence, destruction of cultural properties, including mosques, churches, archaeological sites, universities, libraries, museums. We've done all that. And it's that investigation and those conclusions that enable us to say that these were genocidal acts, that they were committed intentionally. And what enabled us to make the leap from fact to genocidal purpose were the two things that we have highlighted. First, there is direct evidence in the statements of the Israeli leaders in positions of command responsibility. And second, there is a comprehensive, widespread, in fact, Gaza-wide pattern of operations that lead to no other reasonable inference than this is occurring because of a genocidal purpose. So it's the combination of our own investigations and the breadth of what is happening, the extremity of what is happening. This is no minor matter. The extremity of what is happening is such that we could come to no other reasonable inference than genocidal purpose. But that was in addition to the cold, hard facts of what they said. It comes out of their own mouths.
Thank you. We'll take one question from online. D. Ravi Kampf, please go ahead.
Thank you. To both of you, the question is, there seems to be some kind of a conundrum between the Genocide Convention of 1948 and the Rome Treaty. Some countries, for example, are signatories to the Genocide Convention, while they are not to the Rome Treaty. Why I'm asking this question is the Indian issue here. India has, doesn't it enjoin on India, for example, to stop all kinds of either defense or commercial dealings with Israel, since it's a member of the Genocide Convention, but not a member of the Rome Treaty. Thank you.
The difference between the Genocide Convention and the Rome Statute, in this case, is simply a difference of process. The Genocide Convention provides a process of the International Court of Justice. The Rome Statute, and it deals with states. The Rome Statute deals with individual accountability and it provides the process of the International Criminal Court. But the law in relation to genocide, the prohibition of genocide, the obligation to prevent genocide and to punish genocide, these are customary international law provisions that apply to all states, whether they've ratified the Genocide Convention or not, and whether they have ratified the Rome Statute or not. So the difference is one of process. It's not a difference of law. And all countries in the world, whether ratifying one or other or neither, are subject to international law that says that genocide must be prevented, genocide must not be committed, genocide must not be incited, and where it occurs, genocide must be punished. And this is where they have existing obligations. They don't have to wait for the International Court of Justice's decision. In fact, for me, the most significant aspect of the interim orders of 26 January 2024 was that every country in the world was put on notice by the International Court of Justice that there was a plausible risk of genocide in Gaza. And if it had not happened before that, it certainly happened then, that every country in the world became obliged under the law to take action, not to speak fine words, to take action to prevent genocide. There can be no doubt whatsoever that that obligation was activated on the 24th of January 2024, if not before. And in response to your question, that applies as much to India as, Jamie, it applies to Germany and the United States, as it applies to my country and every other country.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we are almost out of time. Do we have time for one more question? Okay. We have one more question online from Anadolo. If you could please go ahead.
I just wanted to have a quick follow-up after Chris's words. You say that member states does not need to follow, does not need to wait the ICJ decision on genocide. But in the report, you say that Israel has flagrantly disregarded ICJ orders. And do we think that after ICJ goes with the genocide declaration, do we will have any leverage that the accountability will be changed? And what would be the difference that member states still supporting Israel? This mean that they would be kind of held accountable under third state support? Thank you.
The International Court of Justice gives a clear guidance on what they mean by preventing and punishing genocide. And so clearly it begins with the state's investigation of the incident. And we regularly wrote to the Israeli authorities to ask whether they had investigated this incident or that, or can they give us a response. Now, that would have been very helpful to us, the Commission, to check on what Nick raised, that people may have other motives. Motive, by the way, is irrelevant to the Genocide Convention because that's a peremptory obligation imposed on every state to prevent and punish genocide. There has to be investigations. If they had given us national investigations, we could have checked whether some soldier acted spontaneously or not. Once again, let me say my own experience as a judge on the Rwanda tribunal. We did that, and we found certain acts of rape were not connected. And so we said these are opportunistic violations, sexual violations that occurred because people took advantage of the situation. So that's a process of judging. And with that experience, we did very carefully scrutinize here. But we would have benefited if Israel had conducted national investigations.
Okay, thank you very much, Commissioner Pillay. Thank you, Commissioner Saidoti, and thank you everyone for joining us. That brings us to the end of this press conference.
You were just listening to Nave Pillay on Israel's genocide in Gaza, the UN report. She was preceded by Chris Saidoti and Irene Khan. They spoke at the UN in Geneva in mid-September. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado, We're an independent nonprofit in our 40th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. We feature such voices as Peter Beinert, Amy Goodman, Chris Hedges, Naomi Klein, Gabor Mate, Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz, and Norman Finkelstein. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Nave Pile, Chris Sidoti, and Irene Khan on Israel's genocide in Gaza, the UN report, and for the classic Howard Zinn book, You Can't Be Neutral on a Moving Train, call us 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or online our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free of charge. To get them, just call us, 1-800-444-1977. George is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening. We go out with Oud Virtuoso Haid Manukyan performing Makan Nihaven.
Winter from the war between the United States and Russia and China would probably get you within about 1% of what happened to the dinosaurs. You've probably all heard politicians say a nuclear war cannot be won and should never be fought. They all say that. but do they understand it? Do they actually mean that? Or is that just lip service?
That's Brian Toon, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Brian Toon on dinosaurs, extinctions, and nuclear war. Millions of years ago, a huge asteroid hit what is now the Yucatan Peninsula in Mexico. The global forests and grasslands burned. The smoke from the resulting fires marks one of the greatest extinctions in Earth's history, including not just dinosaurs, but also fish, plankton, and plants. Today, a war with just a few of the world's thousands of nuclear weapons targeted on densely populated cities could plunge Earth into the same types of conditions that the dinosaurs experienced. A war involving Russia, NATO, and the United States could kill billions of people. And what is the U.S. doing? It is upgrading and modernizing all components of its nuclear weapons arsenal at a cost of over $1 trillion. With the possibility of nuclear war, humans may end up like the dinosaurs. Our guest today is Brian Toon. He's Professor Emeritus in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences and the Laboratory for Atmospheric and Space Physics at the University of Colorado at Boulder. He's an award-winning scholar and co-author of Earth in Flames. He spoke in Boulder, Colorado in late August. And now, Brian Toon.
Thank you for inviting me to talk to you. So today, I'm going to tell you about the extinction of the dinosaurs and what might happen to you in a nuclear war. So you might think this is odd, and what have these things got to do?
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy.